Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mysterious Topics and the Nighttime Podcast's coverage of the History Channel's series, Curse of Oak Island. Joining me, as usual, is Jordan from the Nighttime Podcast. Hi, Jordan.
Hi, John. Great to be back.
Yeah, so we did say we were going to do it every 2 weeks, and it's been 3 weeks now, so we're going to cover three shows tonight. Episodes 6, 7, and 8, because Jordan was a little under the weather last week, so we just postponed it a week.
You can blame Christmas. I think I had too many treats, and I caught the stomach flu, so I didn't want to subject your listeners to me suffering through it. And the day we were scheduled to record last week was like ground zero of my stomach flu, so there was no way I would have been able to do it. I apologize.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want you to do it under those circumstances.
would have made for an interesting episode, but it's probably too interesting to release it to the world. So better off to do three episodes in one night.
Right. And just as a programming note, we're going to do three more. We're going to wait until the three more episodes are on. So 3 weeks from the time you're hearing this will be the next release. That would be 9, 10, and 11, and then we'll do the final episode 12 the week after that.
Yeah, and I guess in the last episode, we'll probably talk about episode 12 of the show, but also talk about the broader season 4 and kind of go back through all the past episodes.
Yeah, we may even go more broader than that, Well, depending on how much time we want to spend. But yeah, we'll find plenty to talk about on that last one.
Absolutely.
So, well, let's start with episode 6 then. This was Circles in the Wood, and That's an apt description of that show. But it started out with the oscillator was digging down, and they hit wood, and they were concerned about going too far into this structure that they were thinking might be the vault where there may be some artifacts that they didn't want to wreck with this huge hammer grab that we talked about the last time that they're using.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been loving watching the hammer grab. It makes for great TV when it comes up and, you know, you get to see the thing open and dump into the bucket of the backhoe or wherever it is. It's really working. And it's interesting. We're doing the three episodes at once tonight. Although we're going to talk about each sort of individually, really this story of digging into the holes they're digging at the site of the money pit, it's just one continuous story that's going through these three episodes. So I'm thinking it's almost a good thing that that we're doing it this way.
Yeah, I agree, because I was thinking to myself, reviewing all the notes on this, that it was going to be a little confusing knowing what exactly, after watching all three of them, what happened on which show.
Yeah, exactly. But it started with, and I was confused with this when I was watching it, is I thought the first dig that they were doing on the side of the money pit, like during the Circles in Wood and the prior episodes, I thought the first dig they started with was where in the prior season they saw the shiny, maybe gold object underground. But I didn't realize until I think an episode into this that they're actually digging in what they thought was the site of the original money pit. So they didn't really establish that on the show. And if they did, I missed that.
Okay, so my understanding is that didn't they make a couple of drill holes that were like, what, like 4 inches in diameter down? And The first one was just one that they made, and I forget how they arrived at that, but then they asked Charles Barkhouse if he were to, with all of his knowledge on the island, to have to mark the spot where he thinks the money pit is, where would he put that spot? And he marked the spot, and this is one of the spots that they will get to actually in the, I believe that's the third episode we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah, sorry.
So this first one.
My mind is there because I just watched that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what I was talking about before. It's going to be hard to distinguish these episodes. But yes, so this one was another spot that they had figured out with all of their research and everything. So anyway, there's a couple of spots, and they're starting on this one in episode 6, is not the Charles Barkhouse one, but another one. Mm-hmm. and they sunk that 40-inch diameter pipe down, and they're sending the hammer grab down, pulling earth out of the ground, and they got to the point where they're hitting wood, and they had a discussion on how to proceed, because I think it was Rick who was the most concerned, and he wanted to halt everything and talk about it, and Marty was like gung-ho. He just wanted to keep grabbing stuff out, and I'm kind of on Marty's side a little bit there, because I'm thinking it's grabbing stuff out and they can examine it up on top where they're safe. And when you start sending men down that hole, that's when it starts getting really dangerous. So I kind of like the idea of doing the hammer grab thing, but Marty or Rick didn't want to ruin any artifacts. And so then they decided to do this, I think they called it the airlift. Airlift method.
Very complicated. I don't know if I can describe it, but basically it seemed like what the idea was: pump water or air down at high pressure, and whatever's down below is just going to rise to the surface with, you know, as the air they're pumping down bubbles up or whatever. So it's hence just the name airlift.
It's just like if you're a kid and you're blowing in your straw of your soda instead of sucking it up, you're blowing into it and it bubbles up over the top of the glass, I guess.
Yeah. That was the plan. And I didn't agree either with the tentativeness to go down there with the hammer grab. I'm just thinking whatever was down there has been down there so long that anything delicate, let's say if there's, you know, like priceless paintings or something buried at the bottom of Oak Island, they've been wet for 300 or 400 or 500 years. They're all ruined. The only thing that's going to be worth anything down there that's going to be in any good condition is going to be, you know, gold and, you know, that sort of thing, like precious metals. So if they took a hammer grab full of it and damaged some 400-year-old gold coins, it's not that big of a deal. I don't know. My thought was just keep going.
Yeah. The only thing where I would be concerned about it is if there's anything written, whether it's a manuscript, and like you said, if it's wet, it's probably ruined anyway, but or if there's some kind of, even a stone, like they were looking for that other one, if there's a stone there with something written on it and the hammer grab crushed it or something and they'd never have it, I can understand that. But short of that, you're right. I would, and this is so much safer, as I said, than sending someone down. I would, I would just think I would keep continuing doing this until at least you found something that would make you want to go down there.
Yeah, like a reason to risk a diver and the expense of a diver. They have so many leads and there must be a finite amount of money to spend investigating it. So they didn't have a compelling enough reason to be careful digging this hole. Like they had their original drill hole, bore hole samples they pulled up where they saw the wood laid in such a way that they thought it may have been the corner of a vault. Yes. Like what they pulled up was consistent with the corner of a vault, but it wasn't telling, it wasn't so convincing that they had a justifiable reason to go in there with like extreme care. That's kind of the way I thought about it.
Yes. And so that hammer grab did pull up little pieces of wood. Then all of a sudden it pulled up a couple of big pieces of timber, and the timber, it was cut square. And they were examining it, and they were all excited, thinking they hit this vault they're looking for. And then they saw just exactly what the title of this episode is, Circles in the Wood, which indicate it was cut by a circular powered saw.
Yeah, which puts it, I think they had the number, but I think they said it puts it in the last like 70 years or something like that, or 80 years since the circular saw came up. I'm just going off the top of my head with the number, but basically, the idea is that if it was cut with a circular saw, it's not original to the Oak Island mystery. It's a searcher tunnel, which basically means it was a tunnel. It probably would from a tunnel used built by people who were looking for the treasure. So not a precious ancient artifact.
And they took the wood over to Dan Blankenship, and he said, well, what you probably are hitting is Chapel's vault. And Chapel is one of those people that you're talking about that was searching for the Oak Island treasure. I think this was in the early 1900s at some point. And what they did was they, at that time, they knew where the money pit was. And they said, now this is where they have documents of written about what they did. And they, I think they claimed that it was 20, they built they dug a hole approximately 20 feet from the actual money pit in an effort to tunnel across to it. And when they got down there, they put wood down there, of course, to support it. And that's what they were hitting here. So what they found is disappointing to them because they know they didn't find the money pit, but they found something now they can kind of they can use as a guide to
get their bearings.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's still cool to pull up a piece of the chapel vault. It's a piece of the history. They'll probably sit it in the Oak Island Museum. And since it was shown on the show and stuff, it's still a cool find, but it's definitely not what they were looking. They threw around a few different numbers as to what they're paying for these holes they're digging. So that's an expensive piece of wood.
Yeah. But it's cool, nonetheless, like you said, to pull up wood from 150 feet plus below the surface. You know that wood didn't get there by itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially cut square like that.
Yeah. Oh, aside from that, I don't remember a lot else. That episode was one of the slower ones, the Circles and Wood episode. What else? What other notes did you have?
Well, they brought in an expert metal detector, and the person's name is Gary Drayton.
I love this guy.
Yeah, yeah. Now he's from Florida. They said he's from Florida, but I think he's definitely got an Australian accent, isn't it?
I don't know if it's Australian or Irish or what it is, but he has he's just like a fun-loving guy.
Yeah, yeah. And he's definitely passionate about his job. Now, I didn't realize that there were that kind of level of metal detectors, expert metal detector, as far as, you know, once you turn it on and you wave it around, I think it would pretty much do the same thing for anyone holding it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's TV magic, but whatever he pulls off the ground, he can identify it right away. So maybe the expert side of it is just the ability to know what the different pieces are that you pick up.
I agree. I think that's what it is, because he was really, really going to town when they got him. First of all, well, in this episode, because he will appear in at least another one tonight. But in this one, they started him on the lot that was Samuel Ball's old lot, I believe. Isn't that where they started? And they went out with him, and I think Jack was along with him, and I think Marty's son. But anyway, they started waving around, and he found something in an area, and it was very close to the surface, just a few inches, and they started digging up, and they found this chain.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the story of, well, you know, pirates, they used to bury their treasure, and then they'd put a piece of chain on the end of it and run it straight across the ground and bury that, so that way they found the chain, they'd be able to, it was easier to find the treasure, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
Instead of just burying the treasure, you bury a chain across, and then if they come back and they aren't hitting the exact spot, at least they'll hit the chain.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So they found this chain, and I think they found a couple of other oddities. I don't think it was anything too exciting.
Nothing groundbreaking.
Right, no. And then really the only other thing on this episode was, now they realized after talking with Dan Blankenship that the oscillator had sunk the pipe right on top of Chapel's vault, that the decision was made to move the oscillator and the pipe over to the location that Charles Barkhouse had marked as his best estimate as to where the money pit is.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we go to episode 7, and episode 7 was called All That Glitters.
All That Glitters. Sounds like, I don't know if you're a big Mariah Carey fan, John, but she was just embarrassed herself on the New Year's things. I think she had an album called Glitter.
I wouldn't know.
That's probably beyond the scope of your show.
Yeah. Yeah. But, and I find that interesting that she's blaming everybody else for her not remembering the words to her own song. But anyway, that's another.
We'll cover that next. Maybe that's your episode next week. You can get her on.
Yeah, that's. But, the reason it's called All That Glitters is because Charles had picked this spot last season, and they had drilled like a 3 or 4 inch hole down. They sunk a camera down. Remember that? The camera got down. I forget exactly how far. It was pretty deep down there, like 170 feet or something. And they saw something that was gold in color and shiny.
It definitely had like the look of something you want to dig down and figure out what it is.
Yeah. So that's why they're calling this All That Glitters, because they are planning to go down that little 3-inch hole. They're going to make it a 40-inch hole now.
Yeah, and see if All That Glitters, is it actually gold? I guess we'll have to tune in to find out.
Yeah. So they call this one C1, I guess for Charles. C1.
Yeah.
And it is 20 feet from the previous one. So I don't know. I don't know all of the mathematics of which direction and everything. But anyway, they think they're at where the original money pit is now.
They're definitely in that ballpark.
So anyway, C1 is where they hit. And I don't remember if they did this when they did the 3-inch hole last year, but when they sunk the pipe down and down it, all the way down to 171 feet mm-hmm. in this location, they hit a cavity, an opening in the ground. Mm-hmm. So they, while they did that, I guess they would have done that with the 3-inch pipe. So now they knew that was there. They sunk the 40-inch pipe and they're grinding it down there, and they kept it a good 10 feet, I think, away from the 171-foot mark, because this pipe is very heavy, and they thought if they got all the way down to the cavity that the pipe would just fall right down.
Just drop. Yeah, so, it was kind of cool what they did was I think they gave it like the big pipe that they were putting down there. They kept it in the bedrock with the idea that we'll keep the pipe down so that way it sits with like 10 feet of bedrock underneath it, but then they'll just extend the drill down to drill a hole into the cavity, basically fusing the pipe up within the bedrock, and that will allow someone like to get down it. It's kind of an ingenious idea.
Right. So the pipe is resting on the rock, and like you said, that obviously there's rock, 10 feet of rock they got to get through. So they have this, just looks like a huge drill bit, and they lowered that in there and it drilled a hole through the rock.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy work they're doing. Like just the amount of effort and money and engineering kind of prowess they put into their searches. But it's a shame that they're putting this much effort and up to now coming up fruitless for the most part.
Right. So now at the same time this is going on at another location, the swamp, mm-hmm. they are attempting to drain that.
Their annual draining of the swamp has come to be known.
Attempt, yes. Yeah. But as we know, they were showing that program at the first episode, the drilling down episode, I believe, that they were walking around. And they showed that the swamp at that point was drained. So we know it was successful this time, and they had a really big pump, and they pumped the water out, and they were showing that they managed to get the water out of there. It was still kind of mucky, but they are now able to get in there with a huge backhoe.
Yeah. Ugh, that's messy work.
Yeah, I know.
And it seems like this year when they finally did get it drained, I think it was, I don't know if it was the second or third season when they drained it before, but this time it was like they were able to work in there. They were walking around and, you know, and doing stuff. So now is their chance to figure out what's going on in the swamp.
Right. But then so Marty starts digging a hole and he's scooped out the muck and mud. And it really wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But
yeah,
then they got a hit with the metal detector and Jack jumped down in there with it. He gets a hit. They can't find anything. And then he doesn't get a hit anymore. It's just so odd how this seems to work.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a metal detector may have a hard time with the swamp though, because like it would be like packed clay with a lot of rotten stuff. Like it'd be pretty thick and heavy and gassy and gross. I just wonder if that causes like kind of like glitches and errors and stuff with a metal detector.
Yeah, I don't know. I do know that Jack said that he thought that sometimes the metal detectors are, when it does this, that they're detecting something further down, so they get a hit, and then they don't get a hit, and so then Marty took another scoop out of there, but they're only able to go so far down with this huge digger.
Yeah,
can only reach so far. So, and I'd be worried having that thing on the edge of all of this wet dirt. You know, if it starts, it could easily fall into the hole.
Especially with an island like this with as many underground tunnels and voids and cavities and everything else. And if you just drain a swamp, the whole thing is just kind of, I think it'd be dangerous. right. And unstable at dangerous at worst, unstable at best.
Yeah, I agree. And at the same time, while this is going on, Charles Barkhouse is on a side trip with Randall Sullivan, the author of the Rolling Stone article, is now doing research for a book. And so he and Charles go in search of records in, is it Lunenburg?
Yeah, it's an old schoolhouse. The building that they go in Lunenburg, Lunenburg's a beautiful town, not far from Oak Island. In the summer, John, if you ever come to Nova Scotia, that'd be one of the places I would take you for an afternoon in Lunenburg. But the building that they go in, it was a schoolhouse way back in the day, and it's one of the like most terrifying looking buildings. If you ever see photos of it, it's often on the cover of books and stuff around here for like, you know, ghost stories from Atlantic Canada and that sort of thing. It's often this Lunenburg Academy, I think is the name of the building on it. But when I was in Lunenburg this past summer with my family, we were talking about spending the night and we were looking for a hotel like at last minute notice. But in the summer when it's tourist season, that's hard to find. And as we were like driving out of the city, or not city, out of the small town, I could see like at the top of this hill, the building that they go in. And it's just, you know, it looks like something that like a vampire would live in. And I didn't realize what it was. I assumed it was like a resort or something. So we drove our way up there and I was going to just like walk in and ask like, what does it cost to spend the night? Then I showed up and I realized it was just like a school. But anyway, I was glad to see that building. I didn't realize their historical society of Lunenburg or something is stationed out of there.
Yeah, it was a very nice looking area. Mm-hmm. As they were driving there, you could kind of see the background, the landscape and that. But so they're looking through the records and they find this map that lists kids' treasure on Oak Island. Somebody had written it right on the map, kids' treasure.
Yeah, Captain Kidd's. And that's, I just wonder if that was just on there as a joke or something. Who knows? Because the island's been famous for a long time for all this stuff. And Captain Kidd's treasure is one of the oldest kind of legends as to what's going on there. So maybe, who knows why it's there? I don't think it's written on the map because Captain Kidd's treasure was buried there.
Yeah, not necessarily. However, they do go through the records in the same place and they find a reference to a book and they're reading in that book about a person that, I forget the person's name now, but he was a local person and who claims that he was in the party that helped Kidd bury $2 million in treasure on Oak Island.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
So,
It kind of came across sort of as like a deathbed confession kind of thing.
Yeah. And this person was in the crew. He was just a crew member that they got to help bury this treasure there. So, of course, then right away, when you hear $2 million in treasure, that's what this person said. And somehow that rock, that infamous rock that we don't even know if it actually ever existed or not, that was down at the 93-foot level that said something below, some place below lies $2 million in gold or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just interesting that matches up. But
as I said, even the inscriptions that they show that were on that rock, I don't know how they were able to figure out what it says based on those markings. They just look like a bunch of triangles and dots and everything, and they never really did explain that.
Yeah. They haven't mentioned the 90-foot stone since. There was that one episode dedicated to it, and maybe that's the last we're going to hear of it.
Yeah, right. I don't know, but I've been saying for a while now that it seems as though so many of these theories that we hear, some of the main theories, are very credible. There's a lot of credible facts in them, and only one of them can be right. But the more I start hearing about this, I'm thinking that maybe all of these theories are just have a little piece of the story, and they all can fit in where more than one of them can be true. But we can talk more about that when we get to this last episode here. And also on this episode, they had the expert metal detector was now in the swamp area. Mm-hmm. And they found a spike. Now, it looked like a railroad spike to me. I
Yeah, me too.
When I was a kid, we lived near a railroad, and I know exactly what they look like. And, but it was shorter than that, and I did notice that. And they did start talking about it. And this Gary, the expert metal detector, said, well, they would have used this on the Spanish ships to hold down the decking.
Yeah, I don't know enough about Spanish ships, but it was a pretty big spike to be nailing through to hold wood down. That's how it seemed to me anyway. To me, it looked like a railway spike.
Yeah, it definitely did. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, growing up in a steel making town on a steel making island, I've seen a million of them, but this guy, he was pretty confident, and I'll believe him. But yeah, it was either way. It was interesting they found it there, but I guess it's not that anomalous because it's a small island in the center of an area that had a lot of boats and stuff traveling around. It's just what was interesting about finding a spike there is one of the theories is once upon a time, Oak Island was two separate islands. They had a boat full of treasure that they intentionally sunk between the two islands and then just backfilled the whole thing. And that was how the site was formed. That's one theory.
Right.
And looking in the swamp, the idea is that the swamp is kind of the entrance to where that original area is, and finding a piece of a Spanish galleon or whatever he called it, that it kind of fits into that theory, making it an interesting thing to find.
Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting theory. However, if they did that, Ben, there would have been open water there, so they would have built a cofferdam at one end and put the ship in there and then built one on the other end. I don't know how they would have sunk the ship below the dirt, that, you know, this far below the dirt.
I think the idea was that there wasn't, like, that was all water. It was really deep, and they sunk the thing and then they backed it, like they just put dirt on top of it, basically, and the swamp was formed.
Oh, so it would have had to have been fairly deep then, right there.
Yeah, I think that's the idea of that theory. I don't know how true that is. I mentioned last week the blog that I read often called the Oak Island Compendium. It's also a Facebook group. They did a little article about the swamp, and what they did was they found photos, I think from Google Maps, of all the little islands in and around Oak Island, showing that triangular swamp isn't that unique, because they were finding it on all these different islands in and around that area and in and around the world. And their idea is that it's more of a more common geological feature, but I don't know. I didn't look too far into it, but
I would think that it wouldn't be deep enough to put a ship in there and then bury it on top of it between islands that close together, because
yeah,
they were very close together if they were two separate islands.
Yeah, in either way, even if that is what happened, I don't think a piece of the decking would be sitting on the surface, because they dug this up from like a foot underground. If you drop that there 300 or 400 years ago, a piece of metal in a swamp, at this point, it's going to be a good ways down, I would think.
Yeah, I would think.
Just with every year, with all the leaves, all the, you know, the stuff grows in the swamp and dies, and you know, there's just layers of decomposing leaves and junk on the top, that it would have just naturally buried that spike far down in, yeah, over the course of 300 or 400 years.
Right. So then just at the end of this show, they did take that big drill and they drilled down, and the guy that was in charge of the crew doing this told Rick and Marty, said, okay, the door's open. Well, they just drilled right through it like butter. It didn't take long at all. And that was the end of episode 7, setting up episode 8, which is called The Mystery of Samuel Ball. And Samuel Ball, actually, he owned that lot where the metal detector guy Gary started on, where he found the chain, and that apparently Samuel Ball was an ex-slave, I think it was, wasn't it, Jordan? And he came up to that area and bought that one lot.
He bought one lot to use it as a cabbage farm. And then over time, he kept buying the neighboring lots for top dollar, which is one thing people found interesting, why he was investing his money back into Oak Island when he could use that money to buy more and better farmland on the mainland. And then by the time of his death, he was known to be one of the richest in that area. So a lot of people just question where he got his money. Was it all from, you know, is there that much money in cabbage, or is there more to Samuel Ball? Hence, The Mystery of Samuel Ball. He's just a figure on the island that his time and his life there and his investment into the island just seems unusual.
Yeah, it does seem unusual.
But I was actually talking to my wife about this tonight, is with Samuel Ball and what would motivate him to stay on the island and buy up more lots. One thing I guess we can't put ourselves in his head, where if I'm thinking if he's an escaped slave, maybe he just wants to be like, maybe he just, the idea of just being on a spit of land, like a private island, because at this time there wouldn't, when he lived there, there wasn't a causeway or anything. So you'd be pretty isolated living on Oak Island, as well as in Atlantic Canada. Our winters are pretty rough. So Oak Island would be a pretty rough place to live for 5 months of the year. But maybe being an escaped slave, he liked the idea of just being with his family on a small island. Who knows?
And feeling relatively safe. At least you have a little bit of warning. People can't sneak up on you necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So also on this episode, now they have the door open, as they said on the last episode, to this cavity 171 feet down where they saw the shiny object. They did drop the camera down there to see if they could locate that object, and they couldn't. Of course, they're thinking they obviously drilled right through where it was last time, so it could have fallen to the bottom of this cavity. But they did sink this camera down. They're looking around to see if they can find that or whatever they can find. And they did see a couple of interesting, they saw one dark object. They couldn't figure out what it was. And I think it might have just been further back into the cavity. Don't you, Jordan?
That's the impression I got.
Yeah. And also, but they did find this, what looked like a 90-degree cut in the rock.
Yeah, and that was unusual. It's, I don't know if I'd say 90 degrees, but it looked pretty close to it. But it was just an odd kind of, sort of looked like the top of a diamond kind of cut into it. It could have been a natural formation where it was just as the drill was going down, maybe that's just the way the rock cracked. Like maybe it's not a formation as it is just the way the rock ended up cracking as they dug into it. That was kind of my theory.
Well, I think, yes. And see, this is what it isn't clear. I think what they're saying is that drill bit would have only gone through the top of the cavity, and this was down into the cavity further. But you're right.
Oh.
I'm thinking it's possible maybe the drill, but the drill was circular.
Yeah, but just as it's circular, but there still would have been quite a bit of pressure. Just like if you, like there's a large rock in your backyard and you took a sledgehammer and hammered into it, the rock would break up and it would maybe make, as it cracked, you know, there could be 90 degree angles and stuff there that wouldn't have occurred naturally. But just as things crack, you know, that sort of thing. That was kind of what I thought, but either way, like when they got down there and they started kind of looking down into the various little tunnel, that tunnel area that came off it, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And I'm thinking because they were kind of intrigued by it, that they knew that the drill bit didn't sink that far down to do it. So that was my impression. It's just like when you're drilling a hole in a piece of wood with a hand drill and how when you get to the end, it kind of pokes through a ways. I suppose that could have happened. It could have gone down. But I don't know how far into the cavity this was and if that drill bit would have created that or not.
Yeah, I guess they didn't establish enough. Like we would have had to see like a 3D model of the hole and where this rock was to really get an indication of where it was or which direction the camera was facing. Like to put it in perspective, that was a little hard.
Right.
Because you just saw just a straight on shot of it.
Right. So then also on this episode, the metal detector expert is still
he's back.
He's doing his thing. And now he's out there with Charles Barkhouse. I'm not sure where he was. Was he back on the Samuel Balls?
They didn't establish exactly where he was, but I got the impression that it was on one of the lots of land that Samuel Ball owned.
Yes, so this might have been not the original lot 26, I think it was, of Samuel Ball's, but one of the other ones that he bought, possibly, yeah. So
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so he's going around with Charles, and they're finding quite a bit of interesting objects, metal objects, obviously. One was what he called a button.
He had an interesting name for it, but it was like a shirt button or a cuff button or a cuff link or whatever.
Or it would have been the metal part left over from the button, apparently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he found that. He found an ingot of iron, which is, I guess, what they would have made bullets from back in the day.
Ingot. Yeah. It's an ingot of lead, I believe.
Lead. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So it's just a flat hunk of lead. And what they would do is melt it down and make musket balls out of it, apparently. Like you say, he knew what this was right away, so I don't know if there was some fancy editing done and they quick went to Google.
Yeah, he was Google. He was pretty, yeah, fancy editing. Like, hit pause and pull out their cell phones.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it would have worked for me.
Yeah, exactly. I would have taken a picture of it, put it up online, just gave it, 2 days, someone would have identified it.
Yeah. And then coins also, they found several coins.
Yeah, dating back to, they thought around 1700. He was pretty, for what looked to me like just a rusty circle of metal, he was like, look, it's King James II.
It was King George, actually.
King George, yeah.
Yeah, the second, who was, yeah, right. And you couldn't.
He was quick to identify it.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. And they were showing it, and I couldn't make out anything. It looked like a flat piece of metal without any inscription on it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I joked earlier by saying, like, I would have taken a picture and put it online and waited 2 days. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's that kind of thing they do in this show. I was noticing, it was my wife actually made fun of Jack Begley for every scene he's in, he has the same t-shirt on. And then I looked at a photo I got of myself and Jack Begley together this past summer, and he has the t-shirt on in that photo as well. And she's like, she was saying, like, does Jack Begley just own, like, one shirt, or does he have a whole bunch of the exact same shirt? And then I was noticing Rick and Morty and Charles, they all sort of have the same shirt on all the time, too. And I'm thinking what they're doing when they're filming the show is they probably have the cast members wear the same shirts, the same clothes all the time. That way, when they go back and edit it, like, if something happened 2 days later, but they want to make it all seem like one day, everybody will have the same clothes on. And I'm sure we're seeing things kind of out of order in some sequences just to, to make it play out better.
Yeah.
So that's probably why these guys probably have a bunch of clothes, just not when they're filming the show.
Well, I'll bet you they told them that when you're coming here and you're going to be on the show, you're going to have to wear the same thing so we can do that. So buy like 10 of the same shirts,
something you
and
like,
pants.
Yeah. But it would make sense, because it would be like a show like this, it would be hell to edit it, because you're compressing like a whole summer into 12 episodes. So if you could only pick, like, if you had to worry about consistency of what people are wearing and stuff, it would be a nightmare to edit. And having everyone dressed the same, that would make it, it would give you so much flexibility to tell the stories.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when you think about it, just getting that big backhoe out there into the swamp to start digging would take, and to do all that would take hours. I mean, that's all you're doing that day, probably. So you're right.
Yeah,
they're coming back and they're doing several things on one episode. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, each episode, like, although it's not this way, but each episode you're probably seeing about like a week's worth of stuff, or 3 or 4 days of work or something like that. That's the way I'm thinking of it anyway.
Right. So Charles Barkhouse, though, did make a very good point when they found at least a half a dozen of these King George coins from the 1700s. The ingot, which would have been from a British or army of some sort, the button class, all that. They were guessing that there was some sort of encampment on the island and it would have been British soldiers. And Charles made the point that Fred Nolan always thought that the British had come there after they sacked Havana. They basically attacked the Spanish and took a lot of a huge amount of treasure, apparently, and then sailed north with it. So that is that's Fred Nolan's theory. Unfortunately, of course, Fred has passed away, but that very well could be. This is evidence. And to think that Fred Nolan was the surface guy, he was doing all his stuff on the surface, but apparently he never took a metal detector out there to try to find this evidence.
Yeah, he seemed like he would have been into metal detection.
Yeah, I know. That's curious that he was spent all those years on that island without doing this. And this guy's finding all this stuff right on the surface right away. I mean, just a few inches below the surface.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, John, but this scene, I've always wanted to get a metal detector when I was a kid. My granddad had one, and I remember walking with him like on the beach and stuff as he was looking for rings or whatever.
Yeah.
This scene really makes me want to get a metal detector. I know my son would dig it.
Yeah.
But it also, I'm thinking like history should, or I don't know if History Channel should do it, but someone should just have like a metal detection show. Like they have Pawn Stars and these sorts of things where people walk into a pawn shop to just, you know, trade stuff in. And yeah. The show is just about like the pieces that come through the door. They could probably do something similar with metal, like a metal detector kind of theme show.
Yeah, I know they had one about guys looking for meteors, which is similar, but
yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway, just a thought.
Yeah.
If anyone from History Channel's listening, me and John can host it.
Yeah. Yes, because we bought my son a metal detector a few years ago for his birthday, I think it was. And so we have one here, and you know, he used it in the beginning right away, and it's right now it's collecting dust, but it does come in handy. Every once in a while, somebody loses something out in the yard. My wife loses an earring or something and will realize, oh, hey, wait a minute. We have a metal detector. And also, we have an invisible fence for our dog. And when they come by to aerate the yard, I go back out there. I can know exactly where that is using that metal detector. So it does come in handy for that sort of stuff, too.
Cool. Yeah, I'd like one for that. And I moved into a new house probably a year and a half ago. I'd like to even just take one just to walk around my property to see what's out there.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, yeah. And it's good for that too. I got to call Digger's Hotline around here before you're going to plant a tree or something to make sure you're not hitting any underground cables. But you could use that for that too.
Cool.
That's what they use. So anyway, the only other main thing was Randall Sullivan, the author, was talking with Rick and Marty in the war room, and he's been there now for a month, they said, doing his research, and he is really starting to hone in on the Francis Bacon theory.
Yeah, he presented a pretty good case, and I thought his description and his rundown made the most sense to me of all the Francis Bacon story I heard, like, because they've covered it before on the show, but it's been a bit more in depth, and he had a pretty good way to just rattle it off. But I guess as a writer for Rolling Stone magazine, he should have a way with words like that. So,
yeah, what I find interesting about this is that the Francis Bacon theory before always involved him being the true author of all of Shakespeare's work. And that's what was hidden down here. But he made the point of saying that Francis Bacon was a Rosicrucian. And also the Rosicrucians had ties with the Knights Templar. So this is what I was talking about earlier when I said that more than one of these theories might be right. Because maybe he was the original author of Shakespeare. Maybe some of that is or was put down there, but also the Knights Templar angle with the Rosicrucians brings in everything else in that theory, which includes the Ark of the Covenant and possibly the Holy Grail, all of that kind of treasure.
I suppose so. What I don't get about that whole story is why would Shakespeare's manuscripts need to be hidden, or why would they, if they were stolen, I guess someone could, but if you had these precious manuscripts made of paper, it just seems like hiding them some other way other than burying them in a wet, boggy place would be the way to do it. Like if I wanted to hide some precious books or papers, there'd be no way in hell that I'd be burying it.
Well, I think so. If you're Francis Bacon living back in that time frame in the 1600s, early 1700s, and you are you have the Ark of the Covenant, or your group has these treasures that they want to hide somewhere, or they want to keep safe. And you also have this incredible secret of being the true Shakespeare author, and they're going to bury this stuff. And you're thinking, well, maybe I'll just put this in there with it, like when they go to the moon, they take one little personal thing and they put it with some of the others.
Yeah.
It could have been something like that. He's thought, well, here's the Ark of the Covenant. I'm going to put my little manuscript in here just saying that I wrote this just next to it, too.
Yeah, perhaps.
So I don't have anything else on that episode.
No,
do you?
No, I think like all three of these episodes, I think that we made the right decision to compile them into one episode of your show, because the season started off with a bang. In the middle here, we're kind of treading water. Although I'm looking at the ratings, the episode All That Glitters, according to the stats that they're showing on the Wikipedia site, it had 3.68 million viewers, which is the most viewed episode of the entire series back to the first season. So that's pretty nuts. It seems like if you look at the viewers in the millions on Wikipedia, it seems like it's just gaining speed even now into the fourth season. They had in the Circles of Wood episode got 3.44 million viewers. That beat the prior record. And now All That Glitters just beat that with 3.68. This season, the first episode started with just 2.6 million. So it's, you know, they got a 33% increase since even the first episode. So it's the show, just, you can say that they're running out of places to look and things to do, but people are still tuning in record numbers. And if you go on Twitter or on Facebook or anywhere online, like any of these online social media communities, there's people on there talking about The Curse of Oak Island.
Yeah, well, maybe the word's getting around. They did call the first episode Going for Broke, and we did speculate at that time that this may be the last season just because of the incredible amount of money they're spending to do this. And at some point, you just got to say enough is enough. So maybe everybody's thinking, yeah, they are getting close to something.
Yeah, perhaps. Well, I guess we'll see. But yeah, aside from that, I don't think there's much else to say. They're now seem to be reinvested with the idea of diving. They're having Chatterton come back, and he's going to, looks like they may even send him down 10X again. When I saw him, like, you know, coming next on Curse of Oak Island, it looks like they're going to start talking about 10X again. So we'll see what happens there. But I'm interested to see anyone dive down any of these holes.
Yeah, I am too. And he seemed ready to go down this new hole, definitely. And it looks a lot safer. He doesn't have any of the obstacles. He can just go straight down and into this void, which, I don't know, it just looks a whole lot safer than 10X. I would be surprised if they talked him into going back down 10X.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
Okay. All right, well, I guess that'll do it then. As we said, we'll be back 3 weeks from the time we release this episode for the next three, and then the week later will be the final episode of Oak Island that we will cover.
Yeah, and with that said, John, we're coming to an end of The Curse of Oak Island. If any of your listeners are enjoying listening to this, I had an idea for a spinoff to the Mysterious Topics coverage of Curse of Oak Island. Is that I've been reading online that one of my favorite TV shows, Unsolved Mysteries, it looks like the company that owns the back catalog of that TV show, they just struck deals with all the different online streaming services, one of which is Netflix. And I watch it. I'm always watching Netflix. But I was just thinking, like, what could be cool if Unsolved Mysteries is released to Netflix and all over the internet? People will start watching it again. And it would be cool to have a podcast that listens to or watches the episodes and talks about the mysteries or whatever that were presented in the show, but also where that TV show was filmed, you know, 25, 30 years ago. Presumably stuff has happened and new information has come forward since the airing of the show, such as if they did a episode on, you know, a missing person, maybe they've been found, or maybe they've done an episode on an unexplained UFO sighting, but maybe since then more witnesses and stuff have come forward and the story's evolved. It could be a cool idea if the show gets released on Netflix and stuff to do something like this for Unsolved Mysteries. If you're not into it, you don't have to do it, but I just want to put it out there. Free idea for you.
Yeah, well, it's always a possibility. We'll think about it.
All right, and if your listeners want you to do that, they should start drafting their email now.
Yeah, well, we'll see. we'll see. All right, well, as I said, that's all for now. We'll be back in 3 weeks for the next three episodes. So until then, thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Thank you all, and thanks for having me again, John.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
We'll be right back.